Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book your free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Unlock your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again on Podcast Friday. And I have to say, we have a very special podcast today because joining us is a guest host who I first met through the podcast and has since become a very good friend of mine, Joshua Siegel. Josh, thanks for joining me on the pod today.
Robin, what a joy. As you know, I've got a deep, deep love for you, Al, the work that you're doing. So when you asked me to guest host, that was the easiest yes I've ever done in my life, especially when I heard who our guest was today. That made it even easier.
No kidding. Well, you know what, Josh, you have become one of my favorite people that I've met through the podcast. And what I've realized very quickly is you have a lot of fans in this industry and all over the world, it seems. So I look forward to continuing that friendship. And yes, Josh, I was excited too. And it's actually someone that Josh had introduced us to. And joining us today is Hyla Pollack. Hopefully I pronounced your last name correctly. Hyla is a seasoned HR professional with over 25 years of experience throughout her career. She has cultivated expertise in diverse industries, including high tech, health tech, and biotech. Passionate about fostering growth and success, she specializes in guiding mid-stage startups through strategic HR planning to prepare them for exponential expansion. Outside of the professional realm, Hyla is an avid sports enthusiast, participating in various athletic teams herself and following sports events along with her husband and four adult children with great zeal. She finds joy and camaraderie of team sports and the discipline of individual challenges. Additionally, she's a devoted dog lover and takes great pleasure in spending time with her furry companions. Hyla, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. I'm so happy to be here. And I will say that having Josh as the co-host also made it special. So the feeling is absolutely mutual. And I'm really happy to be here.
It was great to meet you on our first call. We had a great first call. And obviously the chemistry was there. So it was within seconds I knew, okay, Hyla's coming on the podcast. As long as you would agree, and certainly you did, which is great. Can we start maybe at the beginning? And you can tell us what the beginning is in terms of how far you want to go back. But I'm always curious when I meet someone like yourself, very accomplished. Tell us about your career journey. Where did you start in the business and how did you end up where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't want to age myself too much here. And when I say I go way back, it's pretty far back. But I started my career, let's just say in the 90s. I won't say when in the 90s, but sometime in the 90s. And I sort of fell into HR at the time. I was coming out of university with a psych degree and knew that I didn't really want to go too clinical and too much into, you know, psychology, but I just loved the idea of it. I love people. I just didn't know what I wanted to be when I grow up. And heard about this career called human resources at the time. And again, without aging myself, it was coming out of being called personnel to this new term called human resources. And it just seemed really interesting. It was sort of a people-related role and kind of the heart of organizations at the time, which I thought was really fun and had to do with recruiting and benefits. And I felt like at the time that I would be touching a lot of people. And I started my career at Sony at the time, and it was a massive, massive organization. I ended up, and you know, I might go into a little bit more detail a bit later, but ended up leaving Sony to raise my family and sort of got a little itchy about, you know, I just felt like I needed to do something. And I started a home business selling toys So I sold educational toys for about 10 years. So I found that I could work from home, which wasn't really a thing back then. Be with my kids. I just take them everywhere, wherever I went. I had babies attached to me and kids, and my kids are all born 2 years apart. So I had lots of kids around me. And then after about 10 years, I kind of felt like I wanted to get back into the workforce. So I started a consulting role first with a partner and then said, I think it's time that I go back to actual employment. And very crazily became the director of sales for an organization. So not an HR. And when that was a startup, I was employee number 6. But when we actually started to grow, I said to the CEO, I think it's time that we need HR, because we were hitting about 20 people. And even though that seemed a little bit small, we started to figure like we needed to start building a solid foundation there. And that was started my startup career in HR. And that's where I've lived for the last 14, 15 years or so.
Well, you said something very interesting there. You know, you said to your CEO at around 20 lives, I think it's time to bring in HR. And one of the conversations that Al and I have had, because we launched our company in 2005, and it was the 3 partners and 1 or 2 admin people. And one of the things, looking back, I wish we had done much sooner, because the people, and you said it as well, it's the heart of the company. I wish we had brought in HR sooner. Is there a general rule of thumb when you're growing a company, you're starting a company? Because I know a lot of the people that listen to this show, yes, we have seasoned entrepreneurs who are running large companies, but there's a lot of people who are startup, 3 or 4 people. We had released a podcast 2 days ago with someone who's in that space, and I'm sure they're listening. When's the right time to bring in HR? Because again, for me, looking back, I think we would have been further ahead if we had done it sooner.
I think there's not an exact number. It's not an exact formula. What I have found, first of all, if you're bringing them in too late, which is 70 employees or, you know, 50, 60, 70, it's really hard for that HR person to come in, because they're probably going to have to unravel a lot of things that maybe aren't the best. There's probably habits that they've created, behaviors that they've let go, even compensation issues that have happened, where the HR person is not only going to be able to look forward, but they're going to have to really look back and say, oops. And that's when it's really hard, right? Because change is hard. So the earlier, the sooner you can bring in that person, I think the better. 20 may be too early. It might not be. And I think it depends on the organization. And as you mentioned, the experience of the founders, of the leaders, if they are coming in and this is their first sort of work experience, which I find with a lot of newer startups, they probably need somebody a little bit sooner. If it is, you know, more seasoned leaders, you might get away with bringing it later. But the other thing you have to think about is, what are those founders, how much time are they spending on HR issues that they really shouldn't be spending their time on? And that's another thing. So what hats can they start taking off? Because we also know in startups, people are wearing so, so many hats. And True. There comes a point where you have to look and say, is this the best use of my time? Can I start taking hats off? And what hats can I be taking off? So
Hyla, speaking of hats, so I love non-traditional career paths. Clearly you've worn multiple hats throughout your journey. As you reflect back on that journey and think about your time in entrepreneurship and sales, have you picked up any lessons along that journey that you would wish you had in your early days of HR at Sony?
Do we have 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours? Yes. I wish I would have realized when I was younger, let's just say, that it's okay to fail. I think it's a huge lesson, because nobody likes to fail. Like, who likes to fail? I grew up, and I think, you know, we mentioned it in the bio, but I did play a lot of sports when I was younger. It was really like important to me to succeed because, you know, when you're failing, you feel like you're letting down the team, you're embarrassed, like all of those. But it only came out when I was a little bit more seasoned and more mature that failure was necessary for me to even get to where I was then and where I am today. And success isn't the end game. It's sort of part of the journey. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons is, how do you get success? Well, you have to fail along the way in order to do that. And, you know, I found as a mom that a lot of parents try not to let their kids fail. They'll do everything they can to not let their kids fail. And I think it's doing them a disservice. I really do. I think that failing and teaching them how to fail quickly is sort of a key there. And I really, really wish that at the time I would have learned that. I think so many lessons come out of failure, adaptability and resilience and all of those things that you need to be a grown-up. It was important. So yes, I wished I would have known that a long time ago.
For the younger HR leaders that might be listening to this podcast, do you believe that's a lesson that can be embedded just by hearing it from someone else or finding a way to unlock that on your own? Or do you have to go through the trenches, through the losses to pick that up?
I think that every lesson you have to go through. I think when you think about someone telling you something, you might hear it in one ear. It may or may not stick. It might go out the other. But until you actually experience it, and I think HR professionals feel failure a lot. I really do. And they take it upon themselves and they don't really know what to do with it. And it could be putting out a new compensation process. And then they're going to get half the people that are like, yay, and half the people that are like, this sucks, and why'd you do that? And we take it personally, right? Like, we take it as a personal failure. And I just think that there's lessons to be learned. Maybe you did make a mistake, maybe not. But if you did, own it, take the accountability, but learn from it and move on. And until you actually go through that, I don't think you actually are growing as much as you could be.
Hila, I want to explore something you were talking about earlier on, and it was about taking time off. And when you say you talk about being a mom, I can see the pride, and obviously that has been a great part of your life, but you took some time out of the business before, you know, you talked about selling toys from home and working from home, and it wasn't a thing back then, and then going into the consulting role, and then eventually coming to the point you said, I want to go back into the employment world. Can you speak about any obstacles that you faced during that time as a result of maybe being away from the workforce for quite a bit of time?
I think even before that, my first job at Sony, it was a huge, huge organization. And it was a fairly large HR department at the time. So we had, you know, someone doing benefits. I was benefits administrator at the time. And we had someone doing compensation. And we had somebody doing brand new HRIS, because HRIS was like a new concept then. And one person doing recruiting. We were all women. We were all female. The CHRO was a man, and there was nobody above senior manager in human resources at the time. And I think that was really the norm. So the head, the CHRO, was a male. The rest of us were all female. And I just really wondered at the time where I was going with it. And for the most part, because it was the norm, I didn't really see it as an obstacle. I thought, okay, this is kind of the way it is. So when I took my first maternity leave, I really debated over those months, is it worth it for me to go back? I wasn't making very much money. I think, to be honest, my role, I think I was getting paid $27,000. And at the time I was like, great, I'm getting $27,000. But by the time I really, you know, thought about going back to work and not spending all that time with my daughter, paying for childcare, and also not knowing where I was going to go with this, because for 2 years I was in that role, there wasn't really a growth. It just wasn't a thing there, that I found that to be a huge obstacle. And that's when I decided, why am I doing that? Why am I going to come home stressed at 6 o'clock every day just to spend an hour with my daughter when most of my money is going to be going to paying somebody else to look after her? I had to be dressed the part too. We had to dress very professionally. And I just didn't feel that it was going to be something that I wanted to do. Coming back into the workforce, yeah, I found that it was a little bit challenging, especially not being, you know, the director of sales, because I felt that just sort of came naturally to me at the time. But falling back into HR after all that time, even though when I was self-employed, I was recruiting and I was training and all the things that HR people do, it was challenging because a lot had changed and I had to catch up. Things like culture and engagement, those weren't words that we used at all. Really, it really just wasn't. You know, you came to work at 9 o'clock, you did your job, you left at 5 o'clock, you got paid what you got paid. You never asked for more, ever. And HR was very administrative at the time. So coming in a few years later, where things had changed and culture was a big deal and engagement was a big deal, it took me a bit of time to catch up to that. And I loved it. I found it just to be one of the best evolutions of a role that could have possibly happened. So yeah, that was definitely a huge obstacle for me. And I just tried to learn and listen to people and got into networks and listened to webinars and listened to the people of the organization. And I had the advantage of growing with the organization. I was employee number 6, as I mentioned. So I had a hand in actually bringing on every single person and really understanding what they were looking for. And we built that culture together, which was amazing.
Hila, you and I won't date myself either, but we entered in the same decade, let's say that, into business. And it's funny, I remember going through university and I was working at Sears Warehouse. And if you were sent to HR, oof, you were in trouble, right?
Yeah.
And then from the time that I entered the business until now, because I work with chief people officers, VP people, you know, ops and CEOs and entrepreneurs and founders. And you're right, there's been this evolution of what HR means. And for me, from my perspective, I'd love to hear your take, but it's what I'm seeing, especially, I don't know if I'd say 5 years for everybody, but at least the last 3, I definitely see executive leadership having HR as more of a strategic partner than I used to see. And that's been kind of cool. And from running our own company, I look at our person that is in HR, who's part of our executive leadership. She's one of the most valuable people we have in my mind, because again, we're growing the company and the people that we're bringing on and the culture and the, you know, the engagement that we're seeing, we see the magic happening right in front of our eyes. And I'm thinking, years ago, this person wasn't at the table. So what has been your experience over the evolution of your career?
100%. I mean, even the fact that I think there was a statistic that in 2020, it was something like 75% or 3/4 of CHROs were women. That was like the first thing. So even that itself was like a huge evolution. And I think that was in 2020. So now it's probably even more. The fact that having HR at the table, like with a seat at the table, really I've only seen over the last decade, I would think. And, you know, maybe there's a correlation to bringing in female CHROs and having a seat at the table. I don't know. It could be. But it was an administrative role back in the day. That's just what we did. We hired, we gave people benefits, we fired. That was pretty much what it was. And as you said, people hated going to HR. In fact, even the terminology, right? It went from personnel to human resources.
Yeah.
Then we started using HR. And now it's people, right? It's the people department. We're people now. And without having the voice of the people at the table and without the understanding of who the people are, what are their strengths, what are their skills, what do they want, what does their career development look like, I think it's really hard to come up with a strategy for an organization without that knowledge. And I see HR now as that conduit between the people of the organization and the executive leaders. And if you don't have an HR person as an executive at the table, then you're missing out on a whole bunch of information. It's really hard to make good decisions then.
Couldn't agree more.
So well said. I'd love to take us down a different path and pull us back to your bio, Hila. You talked about the power of sport and how important it was to you and your development. Like you, I think some of my biggest lessons in life came from the dojo, the boxing ring, various athletic endeavors. I'd love to learn more about you and your journey in the sports. Can you let us know, one, what was your go-to sport? And then what were some of the key lessons and takeaways that you picked up from those endeavors?
Well, my dad was like an unbelievable baseball player and actually got scouted when he was in high school to play professional. But my grandmother said, no, that's not happening. So darn it. So I was playing baseball. I think I was throwing and hitting a ball as soon as I could walk. So baseball was definitely my number one. I still play it now. So looking forward to my softball season coming up very soon. Basketball was another one of my big ones, but I really did play a lot of sports. I was on almost every sport team and athlete of the year, that kind of thing. But I think it taught so, so many lessons. We talked about the failing, because learning how to lose was really important. But the teamwork, the camaraderie, I played really only team sports. I wasn't a runner, really. I wasn't good at the individual things. It was all about the team. I think it really gave me that people skill, maybe, right? And learning to win together and to lose together as a team. It was about not blaming anybody. We took the loss as a team. We took the wins as a team. And I think that's really important in life. And it's also extremely important in business. Accountability, I think, is one of the most important things. And I don't see it happen as often as it should be happening. I think a lot of people come up with excuses and blaming, but I think taking accountability and ownership is really important. I think I got that also from sports. And now I really just love, like, I love watching it, playing it, rooting for my team. I still hate losing, but I can live with it. I really hate, you know, the Leafs are about to enter the playoffs right now. We're hoping they make it past the first level. So yeah, really important.
I find that accountability is really big in baseball. Like when someone drops a fly ball, they're like, it's on me.
Yeah.
That was my mistake. And they own it, yeah. Which is really powerful. I want to give you a quick two-part follow-up to baseball. Number one, what position did/do you play?
So I played in the outfield. I started out as a pitcher because I only in sports am ambidextrous. I can't do anything with my left hand other than like swing a baseball bat. I now play pickleball. And so now instead of a backhand, I switch hands. It's crazy. Otherwise, I can't hold a spoon with my left hand even. But then I had some shoulder issues as I got older. So first base is where I sort of landed because with my shoulder issues. That's part number one.
I was at a Jays game on Tuesday. And when Romano, their closer, comes out, there's this big entrance, music blaring, light show.
Yep.
What would be your entrance song?
Oh, that's a great question.
Oh, wow. Jeez, that's a hard one. I'm trying to think off the top of my head about something about being old but still there, but I can't think of a song. I'd have to go to Spotify and say, like,
Somebody should write it if they haven't already.
Going through those were the days, or, you know, something where, but something about, yeah, wow, still around.
And Josh, I love that question. That might be a new addition, your walkout song.
Love that question.
You're giving Al a run for the money because Al's usually got his signature question, which I'm taking over today. But Josh, I love that.
I might think of one by the end of this podcast that is so fitting. But right now, off the top of my head, She Got Game. Is there one like She Got Game maybe? Or
yeah. Well, Hila, as I mentioned, Al, who's usually on the podcast with me, my co-host, usually has a signature question. And I'm always jealous when he gets asked it. So today, here I am. I get to ask it. So if you're okay with it, we'll take it away. And it goes, there's a saying, a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. Can you talk about any proverbial trees that you were planting?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I hope to be around to see some of it, but maybe not. I don't know. But I think we're going through an interesting time now. You know, we spoke about the change to culture and engagement, employee first kind of mentality. There's a couple of things that I think we need to be aware of before we go full force. One is trying to right a ship by completely turning something the other way might not be the best strategy. And I sort of say that because we have amazing changes in terms of diversity and equity and inclusion, and so needed from where we were, let's say, a decade ago. I think diversity is key to the success of a company. I think there is and has been proven correlation between that too. I think McKinsey did a report. I think the Harvard Business Review has also done some things. And so the more diverse you are in terms of gender and race and ethnicity, then probably the more success you'll be, because people bring in those diverse ideas and ideologies and all those things. I think what we have to be careful of is the way that it might divide people instead of bring them together. And the only analogy I can sort of think of is I am quite famous in my circle of friends and family for my chicken soup. And I make chicken soup quite often and sort of got the recipe down pat, almost down to a science with, you know, how many carrots and celery and parsley and all the fun ingredients, individual ingredients that go into my chicken soup. And it's amazing and people love it. And to me, that's a success and sort of a take on a successful organization. It should be like the melting pot, right? Like it's a melting pot. You bring in all these people with all their different experiences and skills and strengths, and you bring them all together for this amazing bowl of chicken soup. My late mother-in-law, before she died, shared her secret ingredient that she added to her chicken soup, which to me was like a crazy ingredient, something that I never would have thought of to add. And I really was like, really? Like, that's what you do? And I pushed back a little going, I'm not sure I'm ready to do that yet. And when I look now at sort of DEI, I'm afraid that people are deconstructing that chicken soup into its separate ingredients and focusing on how many carrots you have and why are there more carrots than celery? And why do you do this instead of this? And I'm worried that we're taking our foot off the pedal here. And instead of looking at this is an amazing bowl of soup and we should just take it for what it is, we're sort of deconstructing that into its separate parts and not looking at the diversity of conversation, the diversity of opinion, maybe the diversity of politics. Like people are bringing different things, and instead of making them feel bad for what they're thinking and doing, we should be making everybody feel good and everybody feeling like they're belonging. And so I took my own advice and I added my mother-in-law's ingredient, thinking I'm not going to push back. I'm going to be inclusive and I'm ready to open up my chicken soup and be diverse. And wow, what a hit. And it's really taken over and it's gone from really good to like amazing. So I think that's a lesson in life. And I hope that we all kind of look at our own DEI policies and really ask ourselves, is everyone feeling that they belong here? Are we accepting diversity in all of its glory? And I think it's really important. So try to, you know, keep that ship going, but not swinging one way or the other to right that ship.
I don't know about you, Josh, but I am blown away by that answer. Like you started talking about the soup and I wasn't sure where, but by the end, I was like, oh my, that brilliant answer. I'm so glad I asked the question. And I can't wait to carry on conversations with you because this has been amazing. Josh, last words before I wrap it up.
Man, everything you need to learn, you can learn from Bubby or Nona and their chicken soup. I do want to ask what the secret ingredient is, but I'm assuming you won't say it. So I'll give a different question. What do me and Robin have to do to get a bowl of that soup?
We're on the same page. Exactly what I was thinking.
Anytime. You guys have an open invitation. Maybe I'll do a cooking podcast for you next time.
See, Josh, this is the entire reason we started the podcast, to get all the freebies. So we got soup in our future. Hyla, thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you for sharing your story. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing these days?
I'm on LinkedIn. Anyone can reach out to me on LinkedIn. Tell me that you heard me on the podcast so I don't think you're some random person
exactly
trying to reach out to me, because I get those too. But no, this has been a pleasure. I really, really thank you for having me. Hope that somebody got at least one nugget. That's my hope.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of clues in this episode. And I have to thank you, Josh, for being such an amazing co-host. I know we're going to be doing some in the future as well. Getting to meet you has been one of the great joys of my life, especially in the last little while that we got to know each other and the introductions that you continue to provide. I'm always grateful. So last words on your experience on your first guest podcast.
I just feel really bad for the other guests that we're going to have when I'm co-hosting, because I don't know how they're going to match the bar that Hyla just set. So kudos to you, Hyla. Thank you for a beautiful conversation.
Well, best of luck to Al for coming back.
Well, that does it for today's episode. I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you did too. If you have any questions for us, please feel free to give us a call or join the conversation on LinkedIn. And remember, as we've seen here today, success leaves clues, my friends.